Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly. Sponsored by Insperity. HR that makes a difference. On News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Hello, friends. It's that time of year, that magical time, when we gather here together at Augusta to see the world's greatest golfers in this picturesque environment, this classic historic golf course that has meant so much to so many through the ages. And it's only fitting then that being out of town during this magical week is our own Michael Kelly. Hello, Michael Kelly.
Brother, listening to you do a Jim Nance is quite a special thing.
Guess who's here?
Hi, Michael.
Megan Shackelford is there, she holding is up indeed. The fort for me.
She is indeed, because, ladies and gentlemen, you'll find this hard to believe. Michael Kelly is out of town, and you'll find this harder to believe. He's on a golf outing. How's it going, buddy?
Well, it's the official start of the golf season when the Masters comes. And every year I'm typically out of town, and this time's no different. I've been on the course 4 days in a row. This morning we're watching a little bit of the Masters and then getting ready to go play again today, and hoping that when I come back this afternoon, Tiger Woods is back in it. You know, Friday's moving day at the Masters. John, I know you're a big golf fan, you know, Mr. Hole in One and all.
Exactly.
So, Michael, when you guys are out golfing, do you take it as seriously amongst yourselves as the players at the Masters?
No. Well, Megan, come on. You know me. And you also know these guys that are on this trip. Now, most guys don't have a beverage on the golf course. We withhold all consumption of cocktails until after the round. But today's our last day. And
I knew the butt was coming.
I was thinking that does sound serious.
Yeah.
And for those of us who lost a lot of money, yours truly, I probably will, about the ninth hole, consume one of those Bud Light products.
Very good. Ninth hole. Oh, there you go. Budweiser's in the news these days, but we don't need to get into that.
Well, I mean, every liquor company in the country has done it. This selective outrage we've got going on right now these days, John, is, I don't know, it's kind of silly and not healthy.
I know, it bothers you. But when are you coming home?
I'm coming home tomorrow morning. I'm coming back to sit on set with you, even though most of the viewers on Channel 2 would rather look at Megan. They're going to have to look at me this Sunday, talking to you.
Well, there you go. Megan, big plans for the weekend?
The Tower Grove Farmers Market starts back tomorrow, and you guys know I love that, and that's what I look forward to every Saturday. Not quite as exciting as a golf outing.
You got the apples out there?
They don't really have apples yet.
You got the cauliflower out there?
Maybe cauliflower. I don't know. Lettuce. Lots of lettuce,
this time of year. Farmers market to buy all the cauliflower and broccoli, Hancock.
Everything there.
What's wrong with that?
But yeah, no Michael Kelly golf weekend. Just
how's the food out there, pal? You've been eating?
Buddy, we had Chop Chop last night for Hancock's birthday.
Oh, nice. For
Bobby Soutier's birthday.
Nice.
And they asked about you there.
Are you a beef and shrimp and lobster guy, or how do you?
No, I was a chicken and shrimp guy last
chicken
night.
And shrimp
both guys had lobster, but I was chicken and shrimp.
Yeah.
The fine attendants down at Jumbie Bay have asked about you.
Have they now?
They said, have you told your friend we got rid of the pool table?
I'm well aware.
And I said, yeah, unfortunately. She said, well, if he spends that much money on the pool table again, we could probably afford to get another one.
Well, buddy, you have a good round of golf. Enjoy yourself out there.
Thanks for pinch hitting for me, Megan, and I'm sorry I've left you there with Hancock. And whatever will you guys talk about today? There's so much stuff to hop into.
Yeah, we got stuff.
We'll handle it.
Find out what's happening with your Redbirds from the manager himself, Oliver Marmol. Sunday mornings at 10:15 on Sports on a Sunday Morning, and Wednesday mornings at 9:50, the Ollie Marmol Show.
I'm excited for not only the club but for the fans. This is a special year for sure.
KMOX is Cardinals Radio.
And we're back. John Hancock in, Megan Shackelford in for Michael Kelly. Megan, how are you?
I'm wonderful.
So glad to have you join us. This is our politics segment. We're going to do this and then move right along after that. We already covered in great detail our thoughts on the Tennessee expulsion situation over there. Another big political item in the news, of course, is the trial of Donald Trump, the indictment of Donald Trump. Your thoughts, because you and I haven't really had a chance to talk about this.
No, I got to talk a little bit about it with Brad Young earlier in the week on DGS, and I learned a lot of really interesting stuff from a legal perspective that I didn't quite understand about the case. So that is helpful. It does sound like legally it's a lot more complicated, right, than what maybe it looks like when you watch the news. Politically, though, I mean, it's going to be fascinating to watch. We all know Donald Trump. We know he can't help but blow up, make every bad scenario he's in 10 times worse. So I think that that's really the key to this now, is watching how his behavior around this situation ends up impacting the broader Republican Party, how other Republicans react, what they start saying and doing, if it impacts who else is going to get into the primary race. I think it's a much big picture. It doesn't sound like legally this is really going to take him down.
Yeah.
But it's definitely going to be a spectacle, like everything surrounding Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's going to be a spectacle. And it's regrettable, I think, in a lot of ways that this was the first case out of the gate.
Because there's others, right? Oh, there are a lot of other things pending out there.
Civil and criminal cases. And this thing's going to get wild. So I don't know if you saw the news yesterday. Jim Jordan, the chair of the House Oversight Committee, the congressman from Ohio, has subpoenaed Jim Pomerantz, who's the former assistant district attorney in New York, who resigned and wrote a book. He resigned during Alvin Bragg. And so you look at that on its face and you think, okay, Jordan's calling in this lawyer who quit and wrote a book about it because he wants to use that testimony to discredit Alvin Bragg.
Yeah, disgruntled former employee is going to come in and tell us all the dirty political secrets of the current prosecutor and why this is a witch hunt for Donald Trump.
And the problem, of course, is if you read Jim Pomerantz's book, the reason he resigned was because his team was pursuing a case of tax fraud on Donald Trump, involving a lot of the information that came out of the Allen Weisselberg trial and the Trump Organization trial. The same judge presided over that case, Weisselberg getting 4 months in prison coming out of that. Weisselberg, who had been the CFO of the Trump Organization. And coming out of that case was information that the Trump Organization would minimize the value of their properties for income tax purposes and then create documents to inflate the value of those properties when they were seeking bank loans and
participations. In other words, he's a con man.
And then that is what Pomerantz quit over, because that case, Alvin Bragg decided not to pursue. Now, I happen to think, you know, I don't know what the statute of limitations situation might be. I'm not a lawyer. But I happen to think that would have been a much stronger case potentially than the case that Bragg actually brought over this campaign finance violation.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting choice. On one hand, I can see why you would focus on the campaign finance, right? I think a lot of people, particularly New Yorkers, have a deep understanding that Trump has a long history of shady business practices, right? And I think a lot of people who just know about him in the pop culture scenario kind of say, you're a little sleazy. We're not all that surprised by that. So maybe Bragg's thought process is regurgitating decades-old business practices. Maybe the public isn't going to feel they're as relevant to right now, to Trump's political career. But it is fascinating that Jim Jordan Like, did he just see this guy's name and decide, oh, you're probably on my side. Let's get you in here. Such little thought, apparently, or research maybe has gone into that. But also, it's not surprising. I feel like the hardcore Trump supporters, particularly the elected officials, you know, they just can never admit they were wrong. And so they just double down and double down. Like, they don't even care about their own reputation, how they appear to their, even just their own constituency, let alone the broader American public. Having Marjorie Taylor Greene run for her SUV was the highlight of the arraignment. Nothing that happened with Trump was entertaining at all whatsoever. But for her, she's always so tough. You know, she knows everything. And she's such a fighter, John. You know, she really gets in there. One small group of protesters in New York City had her running for life back to the safety of her large SUV. So that was the highlight to me of the Trump legal woes this week.
Well, it's going to be interesting. And Jim Jordan may have something up his sleeve here as it relates to Jim Pomerantz. But, you know, this whole thing. And I guess, you know, if you look at Alvin Bragg, he did pick the salacious stuff. I mean, here you got a porn star having sex with a guy and they're paying her off. And then there's a woman that had an affair with the same guy and they're paying her off. And there's a doorman that said he fathered a kid out of wedlock, which, by the way, has been disproven. But they paid him off, too. And that stuff is kind of salacious and, you know, it involves sex. And that was the case that Bragg decided to take to the grand jury instead of the financial fraud case. So all of that's going to play out, folks, before our very eyes. I wanted to talk to you about some thoughts I had on on recreational marijuana, which is now legal in the state of Missouri, and voters all across the area on Tuesday voted to increase the tax on marijuana. It's got a 6% state tax, and now counties and municipalities, many, have placed an additional 3% tax on the marijuana. Do you have any concerns about that?
You know, I think it's still relatively low as far as taxing of marijuana is concerned, right? When you look at Colorado, even Illinois, super high taxes over there for the same product. So I don't think that the local or counties deciding to add an additional tax is going to have a big impact at all whatsoever. I know there's always concerns about what happens to black market marijuana whenever legal marijuana goes up in price. I just can't imagine that that's going to really have the big impact here in Missouri that we've seen in other places, because I think it's so new for us here to the idea of having even though we've had medical for a while, having recreational marijuana is kind of still this like really exciting novelty, I think, for a lot of people. And I don't think we're going to see that big shift back towards people saying that's too expensive, because the convenience is the factor for folks, right? And the acknowledgement that what you're choosing to do is not illegal. You're not a criminal, right, for driving somewhere. You can probably hit multiple dispensaries within a mile of where we're sitting right now.
So our colleague you mentioned earlier, Brad Young, I heard him on this topic yesterday, and I thought he made some really interesting points. Because in Colorado, what happened was you had a fairly substantial population that was smoking weed illegally there. Now it becomes legal. And the number of consumers that are consuming that product has grown considerably, doubled, perhaps tripled. And so you've increased the consumer base for the product. And they have very high taxes, as you mentioned, in Colorado. And one of the things that they're seeing now several years into having legalized marijuana there is that the black market sales of marijuana are going through the roof. And the legal sales have kind of leveled off and have even come down a little bit. And the point he made is that consumers are going to go find their product, and that this actually legal marijuana is a boom for the black market, because those products are more competitive now and they can sell them at a discount and still make a lot of money.
Yeah, and I certainly can see that in a Colorado and a California, right? I think we all kind of were aware that marijuana was a large industry in those places well before they medically legalized it or recreationally legalized it, right? You see it in the movies, it's in the culture. Like, if you want to be a pot smoker, you're going to head to one of those places, right? So I feel like they had a different set of infrastructure to allow their black market to really potentially thrive. I think also, I can't believe I'm going to say this, the way Missouri handled the legalization of marijuana, which is much smarter than other places, right? I think a lot of other places said, this is going to be our financial savior to our budget, right? Mm-hmm. This is a new opportunity for us to get. Yeah, absolutely. This is a new opportunity. We're going to pay up for so many things with all of this new money from marijuana. And by doing that, we're going to tax it at 25, 30, almost 40% in some places. You're absolutely going to see a backlash. Again, Missouri, smart, kept it low, kept it reasonable. Even with the local taxes, we're now sitting at about the same sales tax that we all pay here in the city of St. Louis on marijuana, right? That's not a shocking number. You're not going to get sticker shock. And people have the ability to feel a safety and security of going to shop for those products. And they have a lot more diversity of product that they can get, right? You're not going on the black market and finding a fizzy beverage that tastes like watermelon and might give you just that right balance of relaxation. You know what I mean? You don't know what you're getting. So I think Missouri's actually been wise.
A fizzy drink is...
Yeah, I mean, you can get it always, John. That's the beauty of legalization.
And you posit that the folks from Illinois are coming over here because it's so much cheaper.
I can't imagine they won't.
They come over for gas.
They come shop here for one thing and decide to stop into one of these dispensaries and realize that they can save a good chunk of change. I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing that flow of traffic reverse from whenever they first got recreational over there.
Well, we're going to keep an eye on all of that. We got a very big show today, and you're going to stick around and be on the show for that first hour with me and Amy and Chris Ranji. But before they get here, when we come back after the break, I'm going to visit with one of my all-time musical heroes, John Anderson. He is the lead singer of the band Yes. They are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You may know some of their music, Roundabout. I've seen all good people. You know that song. I've seen all good people turn their heads each day.
Yeah. I'll have to listen in.
Owner of a Lonely Heart. You know that one.
I do know that one, yeah.
That's Yes, and he's the lead singer. He's coming to town. He's going to be at the Family Arena. And he's going to join us. We're going to visit with CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum about a report that came out on Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. He's had some pretty nice vacations out there over the years. We're going to talk about Easter traditions and get into a little campaign finance discussion for you political junkies out there on this Good Friday. We'll be back here on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly. Sponsored by Insperity. HR that makes a difference. On News Radio 1120, KMOX.
I've seen all good people turn their heads each day. So satisfied, I'm on my way.
Oh my gosh.
I've seen all good people turn their heads.
John Hancock and Megan Shackelford in for Michael Kelly today. Megan's been gracious enough to allow me the honor of interviewing one of my all-time musical heroes. Those of you listeners know I'm in politics. I've met four United States presidents, whoopee-doo. Today, I am speaking with the man I consider one of the great composers in rock and roll history and performers, John Anderson, longtime lead singer of the band Yes, and he's coming to town. He's going to be here on Tuesday, May the 9th at the Family Arena in St. Charles. The showtime is at 7. You can get tickets, as I already have, at familyarena.com. John Anderson, welcome to St. Louis, my friend.
Excellent. Nice to hear you.
It is great to hear you. This is a tour that... it's going to be really interesting. You're playing with a group called the Band Geeks. Going to be doing mostly Yes?
All of it, Yes.
Oh, nice. Everything, all of the pieces that we know and love. And I saw that this is not a lengthy tour. How's your chops holding up?
Very good. You know, we just want to see how things go. You know, it's a new idea. A friend of mine sent me a video of these guys who live in Long Island area, near New York. And he sent this video of them performing Heart of the Sunrise. Mm. I couldn't believe how good it was. It was just so damn good. It felt like they really love Yes. They love Yes music. And the sound of the 70s, if you like, you know. So I got in touch with the bass player, Richie, and just said, I really enjoyed the recordings you do and the videos you do. Thank you so much. Why don't we go on tour?
And here we have it.
And he went very quiet. I said, Richie, are you still there? He said, yeah. What kind of a tour? I said, well, I want to do epics and classics. You know, Heart of the Sunrise, of course, and Close to the Edge, Awaken. Oh. Case of Delirium, and some of the songs everybody loves from the 70s, and that's what we're doing.
How does Richie do on that bass lick on Roundabout?
unbelievable.
Does he play a Rickenbacker?
Yes, of course he does. Yeah, these guys are so into the Yes music world, and it's a great feeling for me to be able to go on the road with a band that plays just like the 70s, like the classic band.
One of the things I've noticed, and I'm a musician, I compose some and perform as well, and I have noticed that in my little circle of musician friends, Yes is so much more appreciated than, you know, say, the general public because of the intricacy in that music. And I'm thinking about a piece like Long Distance Runaround, where Bill Bruford's playing in 5/4 time and the rest of you are going in 4/4 time and they meet up in the time signatures. Little intricacies like that. How important to you in composing is it to just kind of delve the depths of creativity?
Well, you do it more when you're on in the studio together, just trying an idea out. You just try this, try that. And I would catch Chris Squire and Bill Bruford doing some riffs and things and think, wait a minute, I have a song, we can go with that one. Do that riff again, and then modulate, change key, and then I start singing the song that I had in my head. And we put that down on a tape recorder and then just start thinking about producing it. So you get into that structure of music idea. That's how we were able to do long pieces like Close to the Edge and all those long pieces, 8-9 minute pieces of music, you know, and you start thinking this is going to be great on stage. That's what you create music in order to get on stage and try it out.
Yeah, and do you have a favorite in the Yes catalog?
It's weird because I've just been going through all these songs, 2 hours of music from the 70s there, over the past month, just relearning, remembering lyrics and things like that. I just fall in love with them all.
Yeah. I it's an album that was quite controversial in its day with Tales from Topographic Oceans. I know Rick Wakeman was not a particular fan of that one. I think that was a brilliant album. Whose concept was that in the band? Did you bring it to the gang, or was it kind of more of a collaboration?
I got together with Steve and did some rough ideas and sort of guess how 4 pieces of music could work, you know, 4 20-minute works. We'd just done a tour with Close to the Edge, which, again, is 20 minutes of music, and Starship Trooper has a 10-minute work. So I said, why don't we just do a large double album, 4 20-minute pieces of music. And Steve said, yeah, look, we can do this. So we went to with Chris, and Alan White was in the band then, and Rick Wakeman. But Rick was doing his own album at the time, so he didn't have much time to work on Topographic. But the idea of the ritual, we're going to be doing Ritual on the tour.
Oh, nice.
It's a monster. You know, it's like... why not do this music? It's still beautiful, it's still wonderful, and it's timeless.
Mm. Speaking of timeless, for many of us, this was what introduced us to the band Yes. It's Roundabout from the Fragile album. And I've heard you tell the story, John Anderson, about how Roundabout came along. I'd love you to share that with our listeners.
Okay, well, we were in Scotland doing a tour. And we just played a show in Aberdeen, which is north of Scotland. We were heading down to Glasgow. And it was about a 4-hour drive down a 1-2-lane sort of, no highways or anything, just a road, winding road. And then there's a roundabout there, the local village there, and then another roundabout. So on the 20th roundabout, I said, there's too many roundabouts on this trip. And me and Steve were in the back of the van, and we started writing the song. And one of the things I noticed was that left and right of this very narrow road was sort of mountains coming right out of the sky there because the clouds were so low. And I wrote down, coming out of the sky, mountains coming out of the sky, and they stand there.
and then we went out the valley.
down through the valley. And then we went through around some lakes, you know, Loch Lomond, and things like that. And these are big lakes, and we're driving around the lakes, in and around the lake. And by the time we got to Glasgow, 24 hours later, we'd be home. That was the lyric, you see?
24 before, my love, I'll be there. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a classic piece of rock and roll, historic music, very clever, very difficult, very intricate. You are now a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and you got there after, unfortunately, the death of Chris Squire, your just phenomenal bass player. And you performed Roundabout there in Cleveland several years ago with Geddy Lee of Rush sitting in on the bass. How was that?
Yeah. He was brilliant. You know, such a sweet guy. And he was a big fan of Chris. Him and Chris used to get together now and again. And he was so happy to get on stage with us. And it was a great feeling. You know, yeah, Chris was there in spirit. I never ever forget that, you know. And he'll be there this weekend when we start doing our first shows. And then when we get to St. Louis, we'll be so well organized.
Well, I will be there on Tuesday, May the 9th at the Family Arena. Doors open at 6. The showtime is 7 o'clock p.m. FamilyArena.com for tickets. The great John Anderson is coming. Before I let you go, we lost within the last year or two one of your collaborators. You've collaborated beyond Yes with some of the most amazing musicians, one of whom, Vangelis. Tell me about his talents.
Well, he was quite an amazing man, for one thing. Very funny. Greek guy. Kind of a big guy, and he had big fingers, and man, he could play the piano and the keyboard so well. But he was one of the first to use laser beams in a show. And the sound of his... When I walked in the studio, I had to start singing every time, because he was already making music, and I waved to him, shout, say, "Is the microphone on us?" He said, "Yeah." Well, said, "Just record this." And we'd write 3 or 4 songs in an afternoon. It was just a natural, spontaneous music. And anybody who knows Vangelis' music is quite brilliant. He did some great film scores. And wonderful guy. Beautiful guy. He's like my mentor.
Mm. Wow, that's a high compliment. How did you start in music? You grew up, but was this something that you knew from a very young age that you had this particular gift?
Well, way, way, way back in the 50s, I used to go on the local farm with my brother, and he's 3 years older than me, and we'd work milking cows, delivering milk around town, and we'd sing Everly Brothers songs and Buddy Holly songs, and then got a record by this guy called Elvis Presley. So we started singing. He would sing Elvis Presley, and I would sing Roy Orbison songs because I'm an alto tenor. Man, we had a great time. Time flew by when you sing.
And there it was, the beginning of an amazing career. John Anderson, the great John Anderson, has been our guest here on The Voice of St. Louis. He will be in St. Charles, right next door to St. Louis County, on Tuesday, May the 9th at the Family Arena. And you can get those tickets at familyarena.com. Mr. Anderson, thank you so much for your time. It has been an honor to spend these minutes with you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it very much.
And when we come back, Megan, we're going to dive back into the realm of politics, if I can come down out of the clouds after that interview. That's next on Camo X.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mysteries Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to Hancock and Kelly, sponsored by Insperity, HR that makes a difference, on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Yes, I wonder if they'll be playing that at the Family Arena in May of this year. Megan Shackelford joins me. She's in for the vacationing Michael Kelly. There's something you don't see every day. And we're going to get back into politics. I get my head out of the clouds and my interviewing my childhood hero there.
You're so serene. Watching you and listening to that conversation was magical.
Thank you. It was pretty cool. I'll tell you what's not very cool is this lawsuit or this indictment against Donald Trump. And, you know, not to get too deeply into the weeds, and we're not going to spend the segment talking about Donald Trump, I promise. But the underlying case, so what Alvin Bragg is alleging is that Donald Trump forged business documents in an effort to conceal payments to two women and another person to keep, according to the court filing, to keep the information of his extramarital activities out of the campaign flow of information, thereby creating a campaign finance violation.
Yes.
That's the underlying case. And the Federal Elections Commission that exists in Washington is charged with overseeing the conduct of campaigns and the compliance of these campaigns with the various campaign laws that exist in the country. And they decided to opt out on this. But what I want to talk about, Megan, because you and I do this for a living.
Yes.
We do politics for a living. And so we're dealing with federal campaign election laws. We also deal with state and in some cases local campaign election laws. And it is my contention that the campaign finance laws in this country have, though well-intentioned, have really screwed up the way we campaign. Do you concur?
Yeah, it's such a complex, convoluted mess of a system. I mean, I think anybody, people who aren't in this professionally, can look around and see how just the sheer amount of money, right, that's flowing in and out of campaigns. And there's a good reason for it, right? We just saw in the city of St. Louis, we had a very low voter turnout, right? You think about how much money corporations spend to market and advertise
potato
their
chips.
Products mm-hmm. to the general public. It's even harder in campaigns because these dollars are being spent to motivate people's behavior, right? To get you to convince that you need to disrupt your busy schedule on whatever Tuesday it is, go out, vote. Not just vote, but be educated on how you're voting, understand the issues, and know very confidently who you're going to vote for, right? That's really what this is all about. This money is being spent to convince people to take a certain behavior. It's hard to change people's behavior, right?
Yep.
It takes a lot of money. We have a really abysmal voter participation level in this country. And so a lot of money is flowing to try to change that, right?
And one of the things that troubles me, and these are well-intentioned reforms. And what we've done is we've said there's a limit to how much you can give to any campaign. It's got to be personal money. It can't be corporate money. And that was put in place to try and, quote, rein in the amount of money spent on politics. Well, what's happened, of course, is that now you've got all of these unaligned or these aligned PACs that can take unlimited contributions, and they often end up raising 4, 5, 10 times more than the campaign committee, yet they cannot coordinate their message.
Right. And so I think it's really confusing for the regular person to understand. You have a candidate committee. So John Hancock, his committee, and he's taken $100 donations from his friends and neighbors and his community, right? And then there's the John Hancock is the greatest man in the world pack, right? And they can take
that
money from anyone they want, anywhere. And in some circumstances, they aren't even PACs. They can be a nonprofit entity that doesn't even have to say who's giving their money.
The only restriction on them is that they can't coordinate with me.
They just all can't talk to each other.
And so here you're running a campaign, and the candidate who's running for office has no real ability to control the messaging that's coming out of that pack.
Absolutely. So it's one of those things that's like, you know, they say water always finds a way, money always finds a way, right? So the good intentions here of making sure that one maybe really wealthy individual can't buy elections is a great intention. But when it's put into practice, the money finds a way. And sometimes it finds a way that makes it even harder for a candidate to push their message. It makes it even harder for the general public to understand who's promoting the messages that they're receiving at home. And that is where it's problematic.
And that is where we need to take a step aside when we come back. Speaking of money, Justice Clarence Thomas has been on the receiving end of some pretty sweet travel. We're going to talk about that with CBS legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum. That's next after the news on KMOX.
KMOX is Cardinals Radio.
Tonight, it's the Cards and Brewers. Amron Total Access, 6:15. First pitch, 7:10.
I'm Cardinals outfielder Lars Newbar, and you're listening to the voice of Cardinals, KMOS.
Welcome back to Hancock and Kelly. John Hancock, Megan Shackelford alongside. She's in for Michael Kelly today. And if you follow the news, as we do, you notice that yesterday this publication ProPublica came out. And they have found that for a couple of decades, Justice Clarence Thomas on the U.S. Supreme Court has accepted luxury trips from a good friend and Republican mega donor without exactly reporting them on financial disclosure forms. To break that down for us, we've asked CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum to join us, and he does now. Thane, welcome to KMOX, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Megan.
So What's the basic bottom line here? ProPublica found what?
So, you know, in for people who are elected in office, as well as most federal judges, but it doesn't necessarily apply to the Supreme Court, any kind of financial gifts, compensation of any kind must be reported, and some of it is actually disallowed entirely. But at a minimum, there must be some reporting. For whatever reason, the Supreme Court is treated differently, and the rules until just last month did not have an absolute reporting requirement when it came to something like what we have here is hospitality, right? So if someone invites you on their yacht or puts you up for a month in their vacation home on a lake, right, in theory, that is an in-kind compensation. And in theory should be reported, but it's, again, it's not the same thing as any kind of financial remuneration or, for that matter, the acceptance of a gift. Now, you could say, well, you know, if somebody takes you on these lavish trips, that is a gift, and that's really where the conflict is. The Supreme Court always holds itself out as different so that it certainly doesn't see itself as elected officials, but at the same time, it is the highest court in the land. So if there are ethics rules, you would assume it should apply to them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So can you explain a little bit more of why it doesn't? Is it just kind of been a standard practice that they get to operate in their own independent manner? What really is the reasoning to set the Supreme Court aside with when it comes to financial disclosure?
Yeah, you know, Megan, it's interesting. This is not totally unusual. There are a number of things where Supreme Court justices are held to a different standard. I think it has a little to do with it, that you know, the lifetime appointment has a lot to do with it. And of course, checks and balances, separation of powers, things that where people are accountable to the public are, from the founding fathers' perspective, your elected representatives, right? The person you vote for your congressperson or your senator, that is the essence of democracy, right? Direct democracy. The Supreme Court, the reason it receives lifetime appointment is to keep it away from the political process, the idea that it would be always treated separately and apart. And by the way, a lot of the controversy that we've seen recently about the reforms to the Supreme Court, for instance, putting them on a time clock, you know, one term of 12 years, you know, you're seeing a lot of that. They did their own recent report on some kind of reforms that could be implemented to change this. But, you know, it's just flat out American tradition. The Supreme Court, in often cases, is treated as very separate, even from other federal judges that also have lifetime appointment. But apparently the Congressional Justice Committee is now given this most recent disclosure, is giving some consideration to changing the rules and making Supreme Court justices as accountable to the same ethics laws as other public officials.
CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum is our guest. We're talking about this story that broke yesterday about some trips, very nice trips, that Justice Clarence Thomas had taken that were provided by a friend and Republican donor to him. Do we know, Thane, have other justices benefited from this kind of travel? I'm thinking specifically, I know Justice Scalia was on some sort of a trip when he passed away. Do we know if this is a commonplace occurrence, or is this unique to Justice Thomas?
We don't know, John, and it would not surprise me if this is common, right? It would not surprise me at all, because, again, it's a little murkier, right? It's not compensation. It's a trip, right? Hospitality, you know, free hotel rooms, things like that. So you can see how, you know, it gets a little fuzzy as opposed to, well, I'm not being compensated for something. Somebody's giving me a gift. They invited me on a trip. Why shouldn't I go? So we just don't know. We don't know how extensive this is. You also have to remember the whole purpose of these ethics rules are to prevent conflicts of interest, right? So you could say, well, in what way does this violate that? Well, one thing what you learned is not just that gift, but the same person who keeps inviting the Thomases, both husband and wife, on these trips also donated $500,000 to Mrs. Thomas's sort of some kind of political action committee she was creating. So that, I think, raises a different issue, right, that a check, an actual check was written to help finance a political action committee by a Supreme Court justice's wife. To me, that's different in a different category than saying, you know, why don't you stay for a big, you know, stay in our home on the lake for a month? You know, we're happy to have you.
Well, absolutely. A clear conflict happening there, which I think we've all been hearing about for a while with the Thomases in particular and their kind of unique setup with him being a justice and her being very involved in Republican campaigns. So I kind of heard you say this was discovered because it was disclosed. So do we think we're going to see, even if it's not, you know, required under the law, just some pressure for all justices to really be disclosing things properly? Or do we think that it will kind of just be a story about the Thomases, as we've seen in the past with his wife's activity, and then move on?
Well, let's, you know, it's Republicans so far in the House and Senate have been more quiet. It's Democrats that are saying that there needs to be some kind of, you know, congressional investigation from Judiciary Committee to see how, A, extensive this is. That's the investigative element. And two, the possibilities of reform. What kinds of rules, new ethic rules, can be implemented to prevent this from happening? But, you know, as I'm talking to the two of you, I'm reminded of, you know, the documents case from Mar-a-Lago. And then we discovered that Joe Biden had documents in his house. So I thought, you know, wouldn't it be, you know, a rich irony that we discovered that, in fact, some Democratic or more liberal justices on the Supreme Court also ended up with some vacations. I will tell you this, though. I have a personal anecdote that I don't mind sharing with you. I did an event with Justice Sotomayor years ago for a program that I run. And I remember reaching out to her and said, look, I'm so grateful that you came to participate in this. I'd like to send you something. And I'd like to send you a gift. She was very clear how much I could spend. And I remembered I hadn't even considered it. And I bought her some, I think a vase or something that was under the limit. So I think there's one justice who was very, very clear that she was under some obligation for reporting and she could not accept anything above a certain amount.
Well, if you want to send me a Tiffany vase, I have no limit thing. And,
well, Megan's is already in the mail.
All right, good.
Thank you.
And before we let you go, I'm thinking too, wasn't there a trip I saw in Egypt where Justices Scalia and Ginsburg were together on the riding an elephant or something?
They're on camels, I think. Right.
Yeah. I wonder who paid for that. You know, that'll be interesting. You raise a good point. There is this requirement if you're a judge or a justice, of recusal, that you say, I've got a conflict in this case, I'm stepping aside. And obviously, anything that would involve this particular benefactor, Thomas would have to, you know, ethically recuse himself from. My question of you is, how common are recusals on the U.S. Supreme Court? It seems to me like it's pretty rare.
It is pretty rare. We oftentimes see it. It's happened with Justice Kagan, who was the Solicitor General in the Obama administration. So her position is, if there was ever a case that where I was in the Solicitor General's office that finally makes it up to the Supreme Court, I shouldn't be in on it, right? So that we've seen it more, but that's a very different concept. She's saying, I was in on that case early. I don't think I should be sitting and deciding on it now. But you're right. This other issue about how cozy we are, I happen to have a friendship with the CEO of that corporation. I really shouldn't. You know, but remember, all this is based on some legal fiction. And one fiction is that jurors are blank slates and have no opinion on anything, and that judges are blank slates, that they have no personal biases. They're simply applying the law. But, you know, that's a fiction, right? Everyone has opinions about, you know, when you ask a juror, do you have any opinions about the police? Everyone does, you know, but to say that, oh, no, I never think about it, you know, it's based on this idea that we can separate these subjective biases. Similarly, justice would say, you know, sure, I know the guy. We're in the same country club. In fact, we played a round of golf, but I don't see why that should affect my judicial temperament on this case. I don't know. I think a lot of people would say, you play golf with him? No, we don't think you should be sitting on that case. So a lot of times they don't disclose things like that. We're members of the same club. I've attended a wedding once that we sat at the same table. So, you know, we don't know how much of that is actually going on. But, right, that issue could clearly have come up. I think we would have a different conversation if a case with that donor, that benefactor, had actually been before the Supreme Court and Justice Thomas had not disclosed this very, very cozy financial arrangement that he has that, again, is not monetary, but is hospitality-based.
As always, we appreciate the time of legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum of CBS News. Your insights are valuable. As always, thank you so much, sir.
We always enjoy talking to both of you. Thank you.
So, Megan, when I initially heard this story reported yesterday, I was, you know, alarmed. I think it's less of a thing having kind of gotten into the weeds and listened to Thane a little bit. How does it hit you?
You know, it hit me a little differently. I was immediately thinking, yeah, to the average American,
right,
a really fancy vacation, that's a bonus. To pretend that that is not some kind of monetary improvement to your life is a joke to most people, right? Mm-hmm. Most people are thrilled if they can pull a few days away to take their family somewhere, let alone have your very, very rich friend offer to take you what sounds like an incredibly luxurious vacation, right? It's not like he's saying, oh, you want to drive up to Michigan and stay at our house for a long weekend, right? This is not that. So I think it is much worse. I also think most people are probably not horribly surprised by it. But I do think it's something we should really start to consider a lot more, what he was saying, the lack of accountability that these justices have, right?
There's
We've
only
seen
nine
it over
them.
The years.
Yeah, and I kind of suspect, I don't know, but, and, you know, these justices, they make a lot of money, but they're not multi-millionaires. I don't know what they get, a couple hundred grand, 300 grand a year. Well, that's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you see Scalia and Ginsburg in Egypt, you know, that's not an inexpensive trip. It makes you wonder whether some of that's being financed.
Outside of even the trips, what they do certainly have, if it's not extreme wealth, they are basically untouchable human beings.
Yeah.
They do not lose their job. They are clearly pretty secretive. They don't really have to disclose a whole lot of what's going on with them. They don't have the personal scrutiny that other people who are high up in the federal government have. So it's kind of alarming to think that they are probably really living these very elaborate, high-class lives where they're having a lot of personal interactions that are certainly impacting how they behave and the decisions they make. It's one thing to have a friend, if you're Thomas, in business maybe, that's not an overly political business, but the person sending you on trips is the same guy writing your wife six-figure checks who's so involved in Republican politics, where these cases we know are purposely brought to challenge political positions and put to the Supreme Court. It's fishy.
And fishy is where we'll leave it. That's Megan Shackelford. She's in for Michael Kelly. I'm John Hancock. It is Good Friday, and it is the Easter holiday season. It's particularly meaningful for me, and I'm sure there's a lot of traditions out there for Easter. We're going to talk about that when we come back right here on KMOX.
Trusted information, live and local, from the award-winning KMOX newsroom.
John Hancock alongside Megan Shackelford in for Michael Kelly. And Easter is upon us, Sunday being Easter Sunday morning. You've got a youngin' at home. What does it look like at your house?
Barrett is 3.5 and has been preparing for her Easter egg hunting since last Easter. I mean, she plays with the basket. The eggs are all over the house. She is thrilled. I have a lot of preparation to make a good egg hunt today.
Kids are the best, and you'll show up at Mass at some point?
Oh, nope. We don't do Mass. We're a pretty secular Easter Bunny only kind of Easter weekend. So we're focused on the egg hunt through and through.
I think a lot of people are that way. For me, faith is kind of the most important thing in my life.
Yes.
And Easter, because of what it represents, is just profound. And I like the fact that Easter is much less commercialized than, say, Christmas, for example. This is also, we're celebrating Passover, which is happening at the same time as Easter. Our friends in the Jewish faith, it's a very significant, profound time as they remember the escape from the Egyptians. And they were slaves, and they were set free, and that amazing story that is told in the book of Exodus is being celebrated by our Jewish friends and by Christians during this time. Good Friday represents the day that Jesus Christ was crucified. And for believers in Christianity, he once and for all paid the price of our sin on that cross. And as told in the Bible, he rose again on the third day and therefore gives his people eternal life. And that's, in a nutshell, I don't like to be preachy, but it's a very significant day for me and my family, and I look forward to Easter every year.
It's a lovely time of year. We just enjoy, you know, not being religious, turning towards spring, feeling like things have, you know, brightened up, looking forward to summer and family time.
And I wish the Cardinals starting pitching would brighten up, because that's the biggest concern I've got right now. That's Megan Shackelford. Thanks so much for sitting in. James O'Sullivan doing a masterful job there on the board. And the show is coming up next. Amy and Chris will be with you after the news on KMOX.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.